Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome to the show Matt Terrio. Matt describes himself as an accidental success coach who helps people pick themselves back up after a major letdown and do over. Matt is also an entrepreneur, author, and host of Your Do-Over, a weekly podcast based on inspiring comeback stories that teach people to start over with ease, speed, and lasting success. As the creator of the Epic Real Estate Investing podcast, Matt focuses on financial education, the importance of multiple streams of income, and teaching people how to create wealth through conventional and creative real estate investing. Having spent 15 years developing a successful career in the music industry, Matt lost it all when the digital download killed the CD distributor. We all remember that. It went fast. So at the age of 34, he found himself where none of us want to be, which is flat broke and bagging groceries. Without a plan B, he was forced to learn something new, and today he's going to share that story with us today. I can't wait to hear it. Matt is also the founder of Epic Pro Academy, as well as the acclaimed author of a book called Do-Over. Of course, Do-Over. Matt, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you very much, Denise. It's nice to be here.
Well, I'm excited. I mean, you've got this great story. It happens to all of us. Somehow, or so, you know, we may be entrepreneurs, we may be clocking along pretty good in somebody else's offices in corporate, and then all of a sudden we're without an income. So this is not a story that is uncommon, but I love to hear the backstory. How did you shake it off and get up and go, you know what, I'm going to do something different, and this time nobody can take it away from me?
Sure. Well, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I spent the next probably 12, 13 years of my life in the music business, pursuing my passion and just having a whole lot of fun and just happened to be making money from it as well. That was, it was planned, but I didn't have to try too so, I didn't have to try so hard. I just kind of had all the right opportunities land in my lap and I was able to take advantage of them. And each year got a little bit better than the previous, and I eventually got major label distribution through EMI. And had those last few years were really, really successful. And I thought I had a formula for creating good albums and having them become profitable. And certainly I wasn't hitting the charts or anything, but if you do it right, if you sell 20, 30, 40,000 records at that time, you know, it was a very, very good profitable business. And
right.
You know, and I had this formula. I did it over and over again. We had a release every single month, and I was just living the life. I was loving it. And then that formula started to not work as well, and it was kind of unclear as to why. So over, a six-month period, we started to throw more and more money at the formula, more and more money at the formula, and then there was this one day where all of the music stores, like the Tower Records and the Virgin Mega Stores and Warehouse, all these giant national chains, they had returned all of this product for credit.
Ooh.
And that was kind of the big eye-opener there. That was like the first sign that something is wrong here. And
really?
Yeah.
So there was nothing indicating this prior to this massive return, you know, asking for your money back?
No, it happened fairly quickly. And we were kind of scratching our heads like, well, gosh, I guess we were not doing as good as we thought we were doing. And, you know, maybe a couple more months later, all of a sudden it was public, announced to the public that Tower Records was announcing bankruptcy and Warehouse Records was announcing bankruptcy. And it was like, wow, is this thing called Napster really making that much of an impact? And so it was probably a few things, but I think that was the major part of it. And, you know, I had an underground hip-hop label. Like, not everyone had heard our stuff. And I think, like, the underground music audience, whether that was underground hip-hop or underground rock or underground dance, that audience was a younger crowd, and I think they embraced that digital download much quicker than general population.
Oh, they did, trust me. And there's a lot of illegal sharing that goes on.
Yeah, and that was the beginning of it, and it was kind of the rage, and everybody was doing that. So it really impacted all of the small labels like myself. It impacted our sales. But really, only a couple months after that, it hit the news that, you know, Sony Music was laying off 10,000 people. Universal Music was laying off 10,000 people. And then Sony did it again. And so it was like, okay, something's really changing. And then I found out that my distributor actually sold their CD production plant.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, okay, well, the writing's kind of on the wall. What do I do now? And it, at the time, my girlfriend, she'd bought us tickets to go see a Prince concert at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. And,
oh, my goodness.
Say again.
Oh my goodness, he doesn't do tours anymore, does he? I mean, that was a while back, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I don't know. It was probably 10 years ago now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I actually like his music. I don't know if I should admit that, but I like his stuff.
No, he's great. It was one of the most. It was one of the greater concerts I've ever seen in my life.
Really.
And that night we were going through the turnstile to go enter the concert. And they were just handing out his album for free. So,
what?
And I was like, okay, they're giving away his album? And they, the tickets were $100 each, the T-shirts were $50, and the album was free. And I was like,
oh.
This is kind of might be a sign of where this whole thing is going. And so that night we got home from the concert, had a great time, and it was like, I don't know, 2 a.m. We were winding down, we were watching TV, and a commercial came on for Bon Jovi. And they were putting out all of their major hits via acoustic. And typically at that time, every time you saw a commercial for a new album that was coming out, you'd see in music stores or get it exclusively at Blockbuster or buy it at Tower Records or anything like that. And Bon Jovi, all they've had at the end of their commercial was an 800 number and a website. And those two things happened in the same day, and I was like, okay, I got to go find something else to do.
Right.
At this point,
talk
I
about
really
hitting get. You got hit over the head with a shovel.
Yeah, and it. And that, I said all that to really to answer your question. Like, did it really happen that fast? And it really did.
Good.
And you know, between I don't know us trying to catch up with our quote unquote formula and all the returns, you know, a couple more months, I was flat broke. I had zero, and I had to start life all over again. I was age 34. Mm-hmm. Didn't have a plan B. Didn't know what I was gonna do. And after some job searching and tried some multi-level marketing companies or something like that, just trying to put food on the table, and ended up bagging groceries. And so that was a very
humbling. You have to do what you have
experience.
To do. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not alone. I mean, you know, I know some very well-known authors and speakers who share that story at one level or another. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
I think what defines you is what you do about it.
Well,
wow.
I didn't take it so well in the beginning. It took me probably 6-7 months to really figure out that, okay, I'm better than this. I can pull myself up. I can do better. I'm smarter than this. And but I didn't know what to do. I was I'd become very accustomed to that comfortable lifestyle that the music had given me, and I really missed that. And just to be straight, I missed the money. I went five and six figures a month was a regular occurrence to now I'm making my paycheck for like $250 a week. And
ow.
I was like, this can't go on. So from an unlikely source, one of the managers of that grocery store, we became kind of close, and he had said, you know, if you really want your money back, if you really want to go out and make money, you got real estate. That's the final frontier. I never forget this. He says, this is the final frontier for the average person to create wealth.
Hmm.
And that just really resonated with me. And he had a few apartment buildings. He had been at the supermarket for 30 years. He was getting ready to retire, and he had these apartment buildings, and he's like, this is how I did it, and I wish I would have done more, is what he said. So that night I went home and did some research and started looking up real estate, and sure enough, everything I found really confirmed what he was saying. And I don't know if it's because that's what I was looking for or not, but I certainly found enough evidence to justify his statement. So that's what I set off to do.
Now, how do you, and I have to ask, because I'm dying to know, how do you purchase real estate or flip real estate or whatever you did, and we'll get into that part of the story, on $200? I mean, how in the world did you make that work?
Sure. Well, I did what I thought the logical thing was first, and I did become a real estate agent.
Okay.
And I
did,
okay.
Which also costs money.
It still costs
money.
You
have to license and go to school, and that costs you money.
Right. Thank God I had a grandma that was empathetic to my situation, and she funded me for a couple months and got me started. And so I started there and did really well. I made some good money the first year. I got Rookie of the Year in our office and did better the next year and the next year and the next year. And after 4 years, you know, I was doing okay. I certainly wasn't hadn't duplicated the income streams that I was used to through music, but I was doing okay. But what the real challenge was is I was working 12, 14 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And that's not what I signed up for. And right at the end of that career, I had a couple clients that gave me repeat business, and they gave me this business over and over and over again. And, you know, we'd show up on Saturdays to our meetings, and I'd have all their paperwork all laid out. I'd be dressed up in my suit and tie and have their paperwork ready to go and say, sign here, sign here. And they'd show up in their jeans and their T-shirt. They're typically 15, 20 minutes late. They'd sign everything, and then they took off for the weekend, and there I was stuck to shuffle the paperwork and hold their houses open. And, you know, I was just like, okay, if real estate is where the money's at and this is going to be my shot at creating wealth, I think I'm sitting on the wrong side of the desk, you know? And so that was the big epiphany at that point. And one thing, when you get a real estate license, it does absolutely nothing to prepare you to be a real estate investor. It teaches you how to transact real estate on the behalf of others, but it doesn't show you how to do it and make money for yourself. So I had to go out and pursue an additional education. And thank God, my first place I landed was the right place for me. I've heard so many horror stories about other people going out and feeling like they're getting ripped off, or they're just, you know, they're subject to sales pitches and don't ever really get the education. So just thank God I got the right thing at the right time. And
I remember seeing those infomercials some years ago where everybody, there were two people, I think, and I don't recall their names, but when they had these really compelling infomercials, yeah, I like to watch these infomercials just from a sales perspective.
Oh, me too.
I never buy anything, but I love to dissect them. It's like, okay, how is this working? You know, I mean, I don't want to pick up the phone because I'm resistant that way. So I'm able to watch these with impunity, but yeah, I will sit down and I will actually take notes and watch these things and go, oh, there's some great psychology going on in those commercials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really masters at it. And
yes.
Behind the scenes, it's actually a rather ugly business. But that's another conversation, I guess. But,
we can have that.
So to answer your question, how do you invest in real estate when you have little to no money? And the answer there is the right education. You really don't need a lot of money to do it once you learn how to do it. And what I discovered was that there's two types of currency inside of real estate investing. You have the actual currency, you have hard money, you have your money and your credit. And then another type of currency I've discovered was this thing called intellectual currency. And the more you have of one, the less you are going to need of the other.
And really?
So, yes, absolutely. And once I got a hold of that concept, it just really made sense. And I really
you've got to explain that. What does that mean?
Well,
I'm lost.
Okay, so the intellectual currency, say, a real estate agent has, or just the general population, is when they want to go out and buy a property, they feel that they need to have money in the bank, they need to have a good credit score, they got to go down to the bank to get a loan, they got to hire a real estate agent, and that real estate agent's going to drive them around to show them houses, and then they're going to buy the property that they like, and they're going to go through this little chain. That's how everybody buys property.
Been there, done that.
Right?
Yeah.
That's just one very small way. That's a very small, itsy-bitsy little box of how to acquire real estate. And what you come to find is that people in the world, they have problems. Life happens. Life happens to people every single day. And sometimes a good fix for that problem is they have to sell their property. And wanted to market and I guess prospect for distressed sellers, people that were in a bind that needed to sell quickly. And what I found very quickly was that people will exchange equity for peace of mind all day long.
And now, what do you mean by that?
Well, they will sell your house, their house to you at a discount and quickly leave equity in the property just to get out of their situation and get on with their life. So they're exchanging equity for peace of mind.
Even in houses that are upside down, because that's a phrase we hear an awful lot these days.
Well, sure.
Is there equity in a house that's upside down?
No. That's why it's called upside down. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a whole different topic.
That's a whole other topic. Again, it's not going to fit every single scenario. I mean, it's not a one-size-fits-all strategy. But if you found the right situations, then, you know, you could execute quite a few deals, and I did. And,
can you give us an example?
Sure. There's a place here. I live in Los Angeles.
Right.
I sent out my little direct mail letters. Hey, I'd like to buy your house at such and such. That was basically how I started. And people would call, and some people would say, don't ever send me another letter again. And other people say, well, sure, you can buy my house, but this is how much I want for it with a totally unreasonable price. And then you'd get people that would say, you know what, I've got this situation over here. I just want my money out. I've owned it for a long time. What can you do for me?
Okay.
And so there's one situation where there's a lady that owned a bunch of property. She had probably, I don't know, 15, 16 houses in Los Angeles. But she had this one property that was in a Latin neighborhood, and she just could not communicate. She didn't speak Spanish, so she couldn't communicate with her tenants, and she couldn't communicate with her prospective tenants.
Mm.
And she's like, this one's just a pain in the butt. I just don't want to deal with it. I just like to get rid of it. And
well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm,
so it's no longer serving its purpose, and she can't really manage it properly, so why hang on to it?
Right, exactly. And my girlfriend, she does the business with me, and she speaks Spanish. So I was like, this was a good fit. And so I asked her how much she wanted for it, and she said, I think it was like $350,000. It was a fourplex in Los Angeles. And
that sounds like a runaway steal.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, it wasn't in the greatest condition, and she'd owned it for a long time. She owned it free and clear, so she wasn't trying to make a killing on it. She just wanted to get rid of it and wanted to get her money back out. And so my question was, great, how many payments can I divide that up in? And all of a sudden she said, well, I don't know. What were you thinking? I was like, well, divide it up into 200 payments. And so basically she was like, well, okay, I'm okay with that. So I don't know, I think that's 14 years, something like that. And so I moved, I took ownership of this property for, I don't know, like $1,000. And then it was $2,000. So I was cash flowing in the positive at $1,000 a month. So it solved her situation, and it solved my situation.
So you didn't have to come up with the big down payment and go through all of the documents that you're normally having to go through if you're going through a title company and all of that. Oh, you probably did have to go through a title company.
Well, we did go through a traditional escrow. We just didn't go to the bank.
Gotcha.
The bank.
Okay.
Right. So those are the type of situations that I would be on the lookout for. And when I found one, then there was an opportunity there. I would present an offer, and sometimes they took it, sometimes they didn't, but it was just a numbers game. And here we are, 5 years later, and I've got over 200 properties almost in that exact fashion.
Whoa. Well, that's a big spreadsheet to manage. Did I get the rent on this one? Do I need windows in this one?
Right. Well, you quickly learn you need to get people for that type of stuff.
I would think,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would hire a property manager very quickly, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how long did this process take you from start to finish? You said 4 or 5 years?
Uh-huh. And I read a book called Rich Dad Poor Dad. I'm sure you're familiar. And it was the first time I was really ever introduced to the concept of passive income. And he also introduced a new definition of wealth inside of that book, where most of us think being wealthy means you have a lot of money in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly how I was raised, and that's what I had always believed. Like, I wanted to be rich, and I wanted millions and millions of dollars in my bank account. And he introduced a different way to look at wealth, is that what you really want to see is you want to be able to do what you want to do when you want to do it and with whom you want to do it with.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be able to do that every single month, should you choose. And so he defined it by a number of days wealthy. So you'd add up your expenses for the month. Say your expenses for the month were $2,000. And then what you were going to focus on was creating your passive income to hit that point of $2,000. So if you have $2,000 of expenses and you have $1,000 of passive income, you're essentially 15 days wealthy. That was how he defined it.
Oh, okay.
So you had enough money to live for 2 weeks, and then you had to actually go create active income to pay the rest of the 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The other 2 weeks.
That means you're scrambling and you're in a mess. I mean, you're just... When you scramble, your brain doesn't work properly. I don't care what anybody says. You're panicked.
Right.
You know, your endorphins are not working properly. So, we've all done that, and it's not a good place to be.
Right. No, definitely not. So
okay.
I was armed with this new information of what wealthy was. So I was like, okay, all I have to do is let me squish down my expenses and then focus on creating passive income. So that was the big distinction for me, that I stopped focusing on making piles of money and focus
mm-hmm.
on making streams of money. And
right.
then I got that passive income streams to I got that to exceed my expenses, and I was essentially financially independent. Now, I wasn't rich. I wasn't living a life of luxury, but I didn't have to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that point, that's where it really clicked, and I got there rather quickly. And I was like, okay, now I get it. So let's just keep increasing the passive income, and then my lifestyle can rise accordingly. And when you approach it from there, you can do in 4 to 5 years what most people can't do in 40 to 50 years.
Right. So how long? So are you still a licensed realtor?
No, I let my license lapse. I didn't need it anymore. You only need a license if you're going to represent people.
Right. And you quit doing that basically when you went, yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. And so you basically took your knowledge from one part of the real estate arena and put it to work for you and then just got completely out of the selling and buying as a broker agent.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Good for you. Okay. So tell us about some of your other streams of income that you created as... Here's the thing about entrepreneurs. I'm going to interrupt myself. Entrepreneurial brains don't ever shut down. We're always thinking. We're always moving. We're always finding that next thing to do. I mean, we get something up and running, and it's working beautifully, and we're always honing it, but we're always adding to our repertoire, so to speak. So what else did you do to, you know, just kind of keep on building out that sales funnel?
Mm-hmm. Glad you asked. Just as I can tell as I'm explaining this to you, like there's some things there that you've never heard before. And you're like, wow, I didn't
do
that. And that was a very natural reaction when people ask me how I do what I do. And can you show me? Can you help me do the same thing? And so that naturally just led to me teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I do teach people how to do what I do. And so I put, thank God for the Internet. I mean, the Internet in one sense put me out of business in music, and then it created a new business for me in real estate.
Yep.
And so I created an online education program that walked people through the actual steps. And I had taken a lot of education, but what I thought all the education was missing was actually step one, what do I go do?
Right.
Step two, what do I go do? And even the places that did have the step one, two, and three, there seemed to be a lot of gray area in between those steps where people would get lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so my whole intent was to create a program that there was no gray area. Like, it was very clear what to do next. And so I spent, I don't know, probably about 6 months putting that together and put it online and then launched that real estate podcast. And that's how I just started talking and teaching there. And then people that wanted more, they went to the online platform and signed up to become a member there. So that has become a second stream of income for me.
Right. So you actually have two podcasts. Are they both on Blog Talk Radio, or how do you host them?
I don't know, I guess you'd call them traditional podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
They are hosted on iTunes.
Okay. Yeah, that's where I found them.
Yeah, I didn't
learn
about Blog Talk Radio until after I had already launched my podcast. It was actually a very new thing for me.
Right. Well, this one will go into iTunes.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. So, I'm just, so people who are listening, I just want them to know that there are different ways that, you know, you can do some of the things that you've done. So where can people find your program on real estate investing?
The online program, the course, is at epicproacademy.com.
Okay.
And then,
do you have a newsletter over there?
Actually, the on the home page, they can sign up for the free course.
Oh, cool.
When I went through this whole process, I basically came up with 12 ways of how to do what I do with very little to no money. And so in the free course, I give away those first two strategies. So in my opinion, I think they're the quickest and easiest strategies to a paycheck. And so my philosophy was, if you can handle those, then you can handle the rest. But if those give you trouble, then maybe this isn't for you.
It might not be the right time, too.
Right, right. So I gave
sometimes timing is everything.
Indeed. So, and then if they want to get to know me a little bit more, I am on iTunes via podcast at Epic Real Estate Investing, and you listen to the show there, which I do a lot of teaching there as well.
Right. Now, I know that I'm fascinated by this. I'm sure you can tell. I'm taking notes. You know, I mean, this is fascinating to me. So mindset, I want to ask you about mindset because it's so important, and you referenced that. You kind of at the beginning of the show, you took it badly. We all would. Look, I've been fairly well off, and I've been broken. I don't like broke. It sucks. Let's just put it there. But you're right. That mindset, when you first find out that you're broke and everything you've been doing is either gone or you've been doing it wrong, it can really play some mind games with you. So, and you said it took you 6 or 7 months to get out of it, but your mindset now is clearly very, very different. So what role does mindset play in setting and achieving the goals and objectives that you set out for yourself? How do you pull yourself out of that, oh, gosh, I made a mess, or go, oh, gosh, you know, I really got slammed here? I mean, how do you pull your – there's a grief cycle, I think, that goes on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens after you pull your head out of that grief cycle?
Well, what really – the epiphany for me during those 6 months of bagging groceries were, you know, I was upset, I was bitter, I was mourning.
Mm.
And,
yeah.
You know, I would share that story with just about anybody that would listen. And what I found was is that there was no shortage of ears to listen. There was no shortage of people to pat me on the back. It's going to be okay. There was no shortage of shoulders to cry on. But what it really came down to is, like, I can complain about this and tell my sad story to over and over and over again, and it's not getting me anywhere.
Right. And there was nobody there to say, okay, well, try this, this, and that. I mean, did you come across that? People were sympathetic and empathetic and offered you donuts and coffee, but nobody said, well, pull your head out of your fanny and go do this. You know, go do something.
Yeah, there was a lot of coffee and donuts for sure.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of advice. And some
of
the advice was, you know, why don't you just stay here at the supermarket and work union? The union's great. Or why don't you go back to school? Or why don't you go and pound the pavement and, you know, and look for a better job? I had a lot of that type of stuff, but I knew that's not what I wanted because that's not where I came from. I was like, you don't know me. Who do you think you're talking to? I am certifiably unemployable. I'm just here because I need to eat, you know?
I love to hear you say that because I rendered myself, and I say this in capital letters, unemployable years ago. I am not suited to work in somebody else's office. I run with scissors, and I want to do it my way. And I don't think I'm alone. I think there's a lot of us out there.
Right, right. And it's really tough, actually, though, because I had a new network of people, you could say, a new community of people that I was interacting with, people that do have jobs, people that do have families and support those families with their jobs. It was a very different mindset than the entrepreneurial mindset. And I felt I kind of had to watch myself where I would say, so I didn't say, I wasn't saying I'm better than you, you know, or I'm better than that. But I knew where I'd come from. Like, I was making 6 figures a month for a while, and I knew what I was capable of. So it was hard to get sympathy from that aspect. From where I was, and it was hard to speak to people in that way, to not sound too, I guess, snobby is kind of where I was really guarding myself from sounding.
Right.
And so that was a tough part. But what I really came down to was I did find people that were empathetic. I did have people with advice. But what it really came down to was I realized nobody was going to do it for me. And that's kind of what I was looking for, help. I was like, I want my mom. You know what I mean? I want my mom, you know, is 34 years old. I was like, someone help me. And I felt all grown up and, wow, dealing with the real world. And so I was like, okay, I have to do it myself. And I have a choice of what I get up and do every day. And right now I'm choosing to be here at this supermarket. I need to choose to do something else that's going to move me in a different direction.
Right.
And I think that epiphany kind of landed for me at the same time when I got the recommendation of pursuing real estate. And so I just
timing. I'm telling you, timing is everything.
And that's where it started. And then I have to say that the book Rich Dad Poor Dad really was the other big distinction, because in music I was all about making money. Let me sell more records to make more money. Sell more records. We've got to put another record out. We've got to make money, and just trying to stack that money as high as I possibly could in a bank account and get that balance to go up there as high as possible. And through that book, I thought, okay, so we don't really want to make a bunch of money. We want to make a bunch of streams of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the mindset. When that right there, if everyone embraced just that, everything that they would get up and do every day, their actions that they would take, would look completely different. It's two completely different lives, and just the exchange of one word and that thought from piles of money to streams of money. Your intention and your actions are very different. You lead a very different life, and you end up with an extremely different result. You know, creating streams of money of passive income to exceed your expenses, you can do in a relatively short period of time. 3, 4, 5 years is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was 10 years, that's relatively short considering the 40 to 50 years that people go and work their entire lives trying to save up enough money to create a residual income in retirement.
Right.
The goal to create the residual income in retirement, why don't you just start creating the residual income now rather than saving up the money to create the residual income? There's other ways to do it, much quicker and more efficient ways.
So and you're right, it's a very different mind shift. I mean, it's a completely different, because you're looking, instead of creating a career or the lifestyle that you choose, which I have done and you have done, you can choose to stay in a job, which would kill my soul. It would. But some people are absolutely suited for that, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that. If you like your job, you enjoy what you're doing and that income that you're getting, for goodness sake, do it. But it doesn't suit everybody. I mean, and that's the God's honest truth. So you have to make that shift, is what you're saying, away from you just doing one thing and doing it well and hoping that it sticks with you forever, into really kind of, what was it our grandma used to say, don't put all your eggs in one basket? Sounds like that's your advice.
Well, sort of. You know, the other advice is that life is short. We only have one life to live, and we're here to live it. And we get to choose where we want to spend our time here. You know, it's finite time. We can spend it working, or we can spend it doing what we really want to do. And if you can match doing what you want to do, or at least find something you can be passionate about that creates an income, then I think that's the better path. I think that's what everyone should do. I just don't think most people even know about it. We're not taught that. We have to discover that on our own.
Right. Well, we sure weren't taught that in school. That's for darn sure.
No, absolutely not.
And we weren't even taught how to take care of a checkbook, which I think is a terrible omission. But you know, there's just so much that you don't learn in school, and then you're thrust out into the real world, and you take your degree, or you call, you know, if you got a high school diploma, you take and you go get a job. And you're right. I think a lot of people are just kind of thrust into that without really recognizing that there are other, you know, streets that you can take, other avenues you can take. But this is a new world. You know, this last 10 years or so on the internet has brought a lot of change. And this is a great time to get out there and explore it.
Indeed. It's very different. I mean, I couldn't possibly be doing what I'm doing right now without the internet. This was not a possibility.
You and me both. I could not be working from home at the level that I work from, you know, the things that I do, web development, online business management, I could not do that without the internet and social media. Couldn't do it. Would never happen.
Well, they wouldn't exist without the internet.
That's exactly right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, Matt, you talk a lot about moving at the speed of instruction. What is, I've heard you say this on your podcast. What do you mean by that?
It's kind of an answer to the saying where you hear people, I'm getting ready to get ready.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And a lot of people go through that, or the analysis paralysis concept where you feel you got to know everything before you can actually start something.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say moving at the speed of instruction, I designed my whole course that you could take step one. You can take the lesson of step one. You can actually take action from a step one. You don't have to complete the whole course before you take your first piece of real-world action. And there was a mentor that I had, and he had a great saying. He's had a ton of them, but one that really stuck with me was, move as far as you can see, and when you get there, you'll see further. And for people that are trying to get somewhere else other than where they are right now, you can't steer a parked car. You got to keep moving. And if you find out you're going in the wrong direction, you can correct the course and get back on course.
Mm-hmm.
Back on course. And, you know, the other analogy is, you know, if you were going to start from your driveway and head out to work, if you were going to, no one sits there in their driveway and waits for all of the lights to turn green between their home and work. They just drive, they get to the red light, they stop. They get to the
right.
They go to the next one and goes. And that's what moving at the speed of instruction is like for pursuing, you know, whatever it is that, you know, whatever endeavor you want to pursue, is just travel to that first stoplight. And when you get there, then decide, okay, am I going to turn right? Am I going to turn left? Whatever. And when it turns green, you go and you make that decision. And if you
mm-hmm.
make a wrong turn, hey, you can go down the street and you can make a U-turn, come back and correct the course.
Right.
And moving like that, you start to experience real progress and real results in your life rather quickly. And I think what that
so
also
just
does...
So just do it.
Just do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
And it removes a lot of the mystery out of life, I think. Because I think people look at somebody that's successful in their mind and they're like, I could never do that. That person is so smart, that person is so talented, that person is so gifted, or they're different, I could never do that. But when you move
right.
at the speed of instruction, when you travel as far as you can see, and then when you get there, you do see further, and it starts to, the mystery starts to lift from what successful people have and what they do to get, what they did to get their success. It all becomes, like, very ordinary. You just have to take the first step. And
mm-hmm.
that's what moving at the speed of instruction really means. That's what I mean by it when I say it.
Right. See, I know exactly what you're talking about. I operate my life in exactly that way. I just had not heard it put like that. And I love the way that you have explained it. Thank you.
Sure.
So basically what you're saying is get up. I mean, you took your lumps. We all do. We do it all the time, and that's part of living. So you're telling people, get up, quit grieving, quit being mad, quit being a victim, whatever it is that you're feeling right now, and just come up with a plan and go do it. Take those steps. Kind of like an infant. The baby gets up, grabs coffee table, and pretty soon they're off and trotting. You just have to do it.
You know, what you said about a plan, I think a plan is very important. You got to plan
Me
to work.
Me too. Yeah.
But you don't need a perfect plan to start working that plan. A lot
mm-hmm.
of times it's not the perfect plan that's going to get you to where you want to get. It's what you do after you start implementing that plan that makes the plan perfect. Does that make sense?
Right. It does. Look, I'm a list maker. I always have a plan, but I'm very agile with my plans. You know, I'm always able to go, okay, I can implement this today. I was going to do it next week, but you know what? Today's the right day for that. I am a strong proponent. I strongly believe that you cannot hit a target you can't see. So having all these nebulous ideas in your head just means that those ideas, they may have been brilliant at the moment you thought of them, but they get pushed out by life. Well, do I need groceries? I just ran out of gas. Oh, geez, you know, Aunt Mabel died. If you don't write it down, to me, if you don't write it down and you don't create a plan around it or some kind of thought process around it, it'll get lost. So my thinking is write it down and then constantly be working at it, you know, crossing things off. Oh, I did this. Oh, but you know what? I didn't do it the way I wanted to do it. Let me go back and rework it. But you've got to have that target so you can actually see it.
One of the ways that I've found that works really well for my clients and when we're creating a plan is to start at the end destination and
right.
create that plan working backwards to where you are right now. Then it becomes a little bit more real and more believable.
Mm-hmm.
The confidence in the plan is greater rather
right.
than starting from where you are right now and driving the path on a piece of paper where you think you're going to get.
I tell my website clients the same thing. You know, they'll come to me and say, okay, you know, I need a website, and they don't really know what they need. And I'll say, okay, I want you to take your ego out of it for a bit, and I want you to step back, and I want you to become your client. I want you to tell me what the client is going to experience when they get there. Are you a resource? Do you want them to download something? You know, are you making it easy for them to come back time and time again to pick up information from you? What is the client experience? And we actually reverse engineer these things. It just makes more sense to me to do it that way.
It does. It creates clarity, though. It creates clarity.
It does.
And for the person that this might be the first time or that they're traveling this path, it also gives them confidence in traveling that path.
Right. Right. And I'm a big, big daydreamer. Are you? Do you daydream and just kind of create thoughts out of nowhere and then go make them happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to keep my mind at bay frequently because I'm really good at coming up with great ideas and starting them. Finishing them can sometimes be a challenge because I'm off to the next idea.
Right. Well, you're a creative. Look, I am too. And creatives, our mind is always buzzing. I don't know about you. I wake up at 3:18 every morning and go, ooh, squirrel, and off I go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just how creatives' minds work, I think. And if you're, you know, music industry, you're definitely a creative. So we've talked about real estate. Are there any secrets that you haven't shared about how you made it through your rise and fall?
Secrets.
Is there anything that you'd really like people to know about you and how you did this?
Yeah, I think regardless, I mean, my path was real estate, but this, you can do this with whatever your endeavor is going to be. I was very intentional about creating a community of like-minded people around me. I found that, and not necessarily like-minded people, but people that were actually doing.
Right.
So it's easy to find people that have, you know, similar thoughts, and you and I can talk about all the great things that we could do, but you really want to go and find the people that are actually doing those great things. And I found that peer pressure kind of works both ways. You know, in high school, you want to stay away from the people that are smoking because you're probably going to eventually end up smoking, and
right.
you don't want to go down that path, right? So that's what we all kind of think of when we think of peer pressure. But it works the other way as well. If you surround yourself with a group of doers or even just the two or three people that are actually doing it, that peer pressure can pull you along in a positive way as well to where,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, gosh, they just bought a house and they got two properties over here under contract, and that person just gave a private loan. Like, I got to get up and go do something.
Right, right.
And it's like this peer pressure that pulls you along to succeed. And so I think your environment has a great deal to do with where you're going to end up. And there's a saying that we've heard over and over and over again, you know, you're going to be the result of the average of the five people that you hang around most.
Right, right.
And I think there's a whole lot of, you know, it's become almost cliche these days, and that's a shame that it has, but there's so much truth to it. And I think
is. My grandmother used to say water seeks its own level, which is a simpler way of saying exactly that, but water seeks its own level. If you're hanging around people who are just not going in the direction that you know you want to go in, you need to find people who are more compatible with your vision.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
That was the one part, that being intentional about creating the environment. The second thing was finding someone to actually model, to find a role model. And that's what I did. And I found someone. I started dressing like them. I started talking like them. I stood like them.
Really?
I worked the same hours they did. I basically tried to mimic them. And I learned through this a great book. Another great book that I love is Tony Robbins, Awaken the Giant Within. He talks about modeling.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how motion creates emotion. So you can actually copy somebody physically. and it'll create similar emotions that that person is, has, and when you have those same emotions, it creates similar thoughts, and those thoughts create similar actions, and it goes down the road like that. And so I embraced that and took that to, I still do that today, and I'm always looking
really?
For the next person that I want to role model.
Mm-hmm. Now, who uses you as a role model that you're aware of? Now, you know they're out there.
I would imagine my coaching clients.
Right.
I've got a few coaching clients that are doing very well. One particular one in St. Louis where I think I've almost created a monster with that one. And I think his business is probably equivalent, if not approaching somewhere bigger than mine at this point. So
really? That's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. And like I said, he's a monster now. He's uncontrollable. But,
let's hope he's not listening.
Right? No, he probably will. Anyway, but that's okay. I've told it to his face. I said, dude, you're out of control now. And I don't know if he had the actual distinction of role modeling, but he did follow and pursue, and he's doing very much the same thing that I'm doing now. So, yeah.
Well, what that tells me is that your coaching program or training program, however you're referring to it, if people actually do what they're expected to do when you created this program, it works.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I want to say, yes, my coaching program is the best, but I think that would apply to whatever. I mean, if you picked up a book on how to, you know, grow a better garden and you took the actions within that book, you're going to have a better garden.
Right.
It's moving at the speed of instruction, and the operative word there is moving. So if there's something you want to learn how to do, there's no shortage of information out there on how to do it. It's you have to come to the party and actually follow the steps and do it yourself.
Right. Well, I love the way you set it up with step one, step two, step three, and you're right. That is so sorely lacking in a lot of programs or even advice. And when I started out, I'm a web developer who is also an OBM, virtual assistant, online business manager and or virtual assistant. Mostly I'm an online business manager. And when I started out, there was nobody to tell me how to do it. I just did it, and I used my own common sense. I wish there had been that instruction. I really do. I could have saved myself some years of, you know, taking the wrong turn or making a U-turn or having a flat tire and sitting in a field going, crud, now what do I do? But, yeah, it just happens. But
here when you were getting started, yes?
Absolutely. And fortunately, I did it right for the long term. But in the very beginning, there are some things that I wish I had known. So now I'm training other people so they can avoid that. But, you know, you did that. You took that knowledge that you had and said, okay, these are the steps that worked for me, and these are what you need to do. But if people don't take all of the steps, that's really kind of on them, isn't it? I mean,
program would be totally useless to them if they don't.
Exactly. And I guess they know that. So do you have any suggestions on how someone can start today, right now, after we get off this call? What can they do to sit down and kind of go within and say, okay, I am going to reinvent myself. What I'm doing right now is just not working. Are there any steps that I like A, B, C, D. Is there any advice that you can give them or any steps that you can say, do this? Yeah, just sit down and do this.
Sure. Let me see if I can formulate them in the proper sequence. The one would be just to decide that I am no longer going to put up with what I'm putting up with.
Don't tolerate it anymore.
Enough
okay.
is enough. I'm done with
right.
this. And make that decision. And recognize that you haven't made the decision until you've taken action. So if you decided in your mind, you're listening right now, and you're like, okay, enough is enough. I'm no longer gonna put up with this situation in my life. And if you haven't done anything about it yet, you haven't made the decision yet. So recognize that, and then elevate your standards. Decide what you will accept in your life, in your endeavor, in your career, your personal relationships, whatever that may be. Decide, create a list. Like, I am going to hang out with people of this stature. I am going to get up every day and do this, and then I'm going to do this. And from that, create your plan. So you start with the end in mind, you decide where you want to go, and you work your way backwards. If I want $10,000 of passive income, what is going to happen just prior to me reaching $10,000 of passive income? I'm going to create $9,000 of passive income, okay? And what's going to happen just before that? And you can go all the way back to 8,000, 7,000, 6,000, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1,000, and you're going to get to a point where, okay, fine, my $10 of passive income. Now I got to do something to create $10 of passive income. Let me go find out what that can be, what's going to happen just before that. And it might be I have a website that sells a little information product or an ebook or something, and I'm going to sell one of those a month. Okay, so there's one a month, there's your $10 of passive income. And then, okay, so if I'm going to have that website, what do I got? Well, I have to have the actual book, so maybe I got to write the book. I have to have the actual website, so we got to do that. All the way to the point where you are right now, where you're sitting listening to me right now, to the point where, okay, what's the first thing I got to do? Well, I have to go Google how to build a website. So everyone can go to Google and type in how to build a website, if that was what you were pursuing, of course. And you just now you just got to get up and take that one step at a time. And if you do that, you're going to get there.
Right. Now, let me ask you this, and this is something I hear all the time, and I'm sure you do as well. Oh, I just don't have enough time. I have to tell you, that hurts my dental work. My teeth snap together.
Yeah, you got to decide what's important in your life and where you want to spend your time. Everything that you're dealing with right now, everything that you have in your life right now is 100% your doing. And if there's something else you want out of your life, it's going to be 100% your doing. So if you don't have the time, most people, they do, they just don't think they do, you're going to have to borrow it or steal it from somewhere else. Perhaps the most easiest place to take it from is how much time of TV are you watching a week?
Yeah.
You know, there's a dozen hours for every person walking this earth almost, you know, right there.
Yeah.
Or video games. Or, you know, whatever it may be. We've all got time, and you might have to work overtime in the beginning to get it started. But if it's important enough to you, you'll do it. And if it's not, you won't. And that's one thing I find a lot with when I have a new client that comes to me and they want to be a real estate investor. I'm just like, so why real estate? Why do you even want to be a real estate investor? I just want it so bad, and I want this, and I want that, and I want to do what you do, and my friend does it, and Donald Trump did it, and I would just want that. And I say, okay, great. So, you know, after a couple of weeks, I was like, so did you do your homework? And I said, no. I'm like, well, you just don't want it bad enough.
Right.
It's just not important enough to you because you found something else to do this week that was more important than doing that. I have the same issue with my weight. It's like, I want washboard abs in the worst way, and I'm 44 years old, and I've been saying this for 30 years. And I have to come to the realization that, well, those washboard abs, I guess they're just not that important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or else I would have done it. And sometimes that hurts, but that's a reality because there's other things that are great in my life that I do have, and obviously those things were important enough for me.
Right. Well, to go back to time, I read this somewhere, and then I posted it on my Facebook page, and I think it's so important. And basically, it's kind of a quote. It says, never say you don't have enough time. You have exactly the same hours per day as Benjamin Franklin, Helen Keller, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and Albert Einstein. Look what they did with exactly the same amount of hours that we blow through every day. So all that is, there's no excuses. If you want it, you will do it.
Their priorities were elsewhere.
That's right.
Their priorities were in a different place than where yours are. So you just have to rearrange your priorities.
Now, how tough is that? Was that difficult for you to do? Because it's easy to say. It's easy for us to just kind of toss that out and say, okay, guys, go do this. Sometimes it really is not as easy as just sitting down and saying, okay, I'm going to do this. Were there any mind shifts that you went through when you were saying, okay, my music thing is just not going where it's gone. It's just gone because of the changes in you know, the infrastructure, the changes in how people are actually getting their music now or stealing their music. So I know you had that 6 month where you were bagging groceries, which I'm actually very proud of you for doing that. A lot of people wouldn't. How did your mind how did you change your mind? I mean, was there any defining moment where you just said, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. Yeah, it's paying the bills, but this is not me. Now what do I do?
There was a very specific moment, actually. I was 4 or 5 months into bagging groceries, and I had graduated to the actual checkout clerk.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I was highfalutin. And I was a lady had come through. This is in Manhattan Beach, and she looked like she was very well-to-do. If you were going to draw a picture of a wealthy soccer mom, that's pretty much what she looks like. And she had her kids, and she was just dressed in her workout gear, but very fashionable and very well put together. And she opened up her wallet to pay for her groceries. And as she opened up her wallet, her little ATM receipt fell out of her wallet and onto the counter. And I couldn't help but sneak a peek. My eyes went straight to the balance.
Mm-hmm.
And she had $256,000 in her checking account.
Ow.
And I was like...
My eyes would water.
And I remember when that was a balance in my checking account. And I was like, I'm never going to see that again unless I do something differently. And I had to excuse myself. I took an early break. I said, Mr. Manager, I will be right back. And I went out to the car, and I put my head on the steering wheel. I started to cry, and it just kind of came up to me that I am so much better than this. What am I doing? And that was really the moment where I was like, I have to do something else. It's a famous quote. If I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to keep getting what I'm getting. And if I want to get something else, I have to do something differently. And that was the moment. That was kind of my rock bottom, my definition or my experience of rock bottom.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I know that's a tough thing to talk about. I can hear it in your voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did you do that day? I'm dying to know when you went back off of your break and into the store. What happened when you went home that night?
Perfect. So as I got off my shift, I did take a bottle of wine, and I went home, and I sat in front of the computer, and it was just Google and myself. And I started typing in real estate investing. I started wealthy and rich people. What are they all doing? And what I found that night was I had found that an aunt from my father's side of the family, and I hadn't seen her for years, and found out that she was the number one real estate agent in the city, just two cities over.
Oh.
So I sent out an email. Hey, it's me. And we had lunch the next day, and within 48 hours, I was in school to get my real estate license. So that's what I did, and that's what started the whole journey.
You know, I'm listening to the story, and there were several things along the way that sound like they were just meant to happen, but here's what happened. I mean, you had the gentleman tell you about his apartment building. Then you saw the receipt from the lady. Then you had your epiphany. Then your aunt just magically was the right person at the right time. But here's the difference between you and a lot of people. You actually paid attention to it and then took action. So it looked to me like there was, maybe a higher power saying, hello, are you paying attention? And you were. And I think that's so important. And people need to really, really pay attention to the opportunities that come to them, even if they don't recognize them as an opportunity.
Indeed. You say higher power, and everyone has their version of that higher power.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think even if you don't have a belief in a higher power, you could dwindle it all the way down to just what you're focused on.
Right.
What are you actually looking at? The manager told me that, real estate is the final frontier if you ever want to be wealthy. Well, that's exactly what I went on the internet looking for. And because
that phrase,
for it,
those search terms?
I found it,
Yeah.
I found the evidence to confirm. And it's because what I was focused on. If you would have told me, underwater basket weaving is the final frontier to get wealthy, that's what I would have been searching for, and I would have never found real estate.
Right.
But both opportunities were there before me. And, you might not find it the first time you look, but if you're looking for something new, you'll find it. And I think a great place to start is is look at someone in your life, whether you know them or someone you know of, or even if it's a celebrity. What is somebody that you really respect and admire about that person? And who is someone that you'd want to be like or have what they have? That's a great place to start for your inspiration of, you know, what is there to do next? And I don't want to do real estate. And there's a lot of people that don't want to do real estate. Well, great. Who else in your life has what you want to have? And so what they did to get there might be a great place for you to go start looking.
That is great advice. Do you know we're out of time? I mean, this hour went so fast, and I'm fascinated. I mean, we just blew through 60 minutes and nothing flat. I would love for you to come back again.
I'd love to.
Okay, good. I always do this on the show, so you can't say, well, no. It's very tricky. But
you pinned me down.
Yeah. I would love to. I mean, we've got a lot to chat about, and I think your story is fascinating. Thank you for sharing it. But I would like to get into kind of some of the nuts and bolts the next time we chat about things, if you don't mind.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Great. Well, listen, everybody, thank you so much for being with me here today and with Matt. The show will be available for download in about an hour. And have a great day, and I will see you next week. Matt, thank you.
You're welcome, Denise. Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffith at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.